Hello, everyone. Welcome to Of Slippers and Spindles. I'm Cassie.
I'm Drew.
How are you, Drew?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Cool. Listen, I'm just going to say it. We started recording this and my computer freaked out. And so this is our second time recording this episode. You know what? For this to be like our 40-something-ith episode and we've never had to do that, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our first time with technical difficulties bad enough that we've had to re-record. And we were only about 20 minutes into it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So nothing too crazy, but still. Here we are.
You missed some good banter about my bookshelf and my pile of shame, but I'm going to let that fade into the ether and just leave you wondering.
That's fine. We know, Cassie, you are a book lover. You have lots of books. You've been unpacking them for like weeks now.
It's true.
But I did want to tell you about a book that I have been reading because something fun popped up in it.
Absolutely.
So I just finished reading a book called Sisters of the Never Sea by Cynthia Latiche Smith, which is a modern middle grade retelling of Peter Pan. And retelling is a generous word. It's more of a reimagining. But it's closer than I would say Crimson Bound is to Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know how familiar our listeners are or you are with Peter Pan, but something that is a thing that happens in Peter Pan is that Wendy is telling the story of Cinderella to her brothers, and Peter keeps coming back to the window because he wants to hear the story, and this particular night that Peter Pan takes place, he's here to hear the ending of Cinderella. And so in this modern retelling, the version of Cinderella that Wendy has been telling her brother is Ella Enchanted by Gail Carson Levine.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So like at first it just mentions that she's reading Ella Enchanted, and then it later specifies that she's been reading it out loud to her brother. And I realized that like we were using this version of Cinderella as the story mechanism from Peter Pan. And I just got really excited because, you know, we love Ella Enchanted.
Yeah, I really like that. That was really cool. How was that? Yeah, did that seem fresh? Like I hadn't reacted that way already once tonight?
Yes, that was great. Good, well
excellent.
Done.
Perfect. I don't have that acting degree on the wall for nothing.
Listen, I wanted to share it with you, but I also wanted to share it with the listeners because I know a lot of our listeners like Ella Enchanted. So thank you for pretending that you had never heard that story before.
Also, when I talked about the acting degree on the wall, there's no acting degree on my wall. I have no idea where my diploma is.
You
no
really
clue.
Sold that. Wow. Well done.
My diploma is in a box somewhere.
Yeah, my acting degree is not on the wall either. It is in a box. I do know where it is. So
it's in a box.
I'll take credit for that.
A third of my life is still in a box, so it's okay.
Well, that's true. That's true. You're in different circumstances at the moment.
That's true.
Yes.
So let's just jump feet first back into this movie.
We're
going
to jump into Jack the Giant Slayer is our first retelling of Jack and the Beanstalk. If you don't want to be spoiled for this movie, go watch it first and then come back and listen to the podcast. What did you think of Jack the Giant Slayer?
I really liked it. And I will say this, in our previous introductory episode, we did say that this was available to watch on HBO Max, and it's not actually available anymore
on
HBO Max, which is a shame.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. But you can check a copy out from your local library, which is what I did, or you can rent it from Amazon, which is also what I did because the copy I got from my library was in really bad condition.
And that's
kept
the worst.
Skipping like 5 minutes of really important introductory exposition.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's worth it. I really enjoyed this movie. I like what they did with the story, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Let's talk about Jack the Giant Slayer.
Yeah. So we start off with young Jack in a very classic fairy tale movie motif, if you will.
Yeah. So often we meet our heroes when they're young and they're hearing a story. And that's exactly what's happening here.
And in this case, Jack is hearing the legend of Eric the Great, King Eric the Great, who defeated the giants. And I really, really liked this choice because we talked in our introductory episode about how we really need this world to be expanded and we need it to be addressed, the fact that there are giants, and have the human world kind of reacting to that. And this movie, like, it starts you there.
Yeah.
There is this legend. Most people just believe that it's a story. It's like a history, but it's kind of in the vein of like Robin Hood for us, where yeah, maybe it happened, but it probably didn't. And that's what most people believe. They don't believe in giants, but Jack does. And so this introductory bit is Jack as a child and his father's reading the story to him. And then Princess Isabel is a child and her mother is reading the story to her. And it goes back and forth between the two kids as they listen to this tale of Eric the Great and the giants.
Yes. And an important element of Eric the Great's story is that he conquered the giants via this magic crown.
Yeah. So the magic beans that make it possible to go to the giants' world were created by monks who wanted to see God and got more than they bargained for, which I thought this was such a clever, creative explanation for these things.
Yeah, someone wanted to go to the sky. Why would you want to go to the sky? Because we believe God is in the sky. So they don't go into detail about how these beans were created, but no. I like this idea.
Yeah. They don't find God, though. They find giants, and the giants are bloodthirsty and mean, and once they get a taste of human flesh, it's all that they want. So they're dead set on conquering the human world. And so what happens next for the humans, they are able to kill a giant. They use his heart to forge a crown that allows the wearer to have complete domination over the entire race of giants and to control them entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And so King Eric uses the crown, but not to like conquer them or enslave them or anything like that, just to get them to leave the humans alone long enough for them to destroy the beanstalk so that the giants can't attack the humans anymore. And then he keeps the beans and the crown safe for his entire reign. And when he dies, he orders that both objects be buried with him so that they can't be used again. And I'm sitting here going, okay, maybe we should destroy them in that case. Maybe we shouldn't just bury them.
I think keeping the crown around would make sense, though, because just in case the giants get access back to our world, we want to keep the crown around. But the beans, I don't know why you wouldn't want to destroy the beans.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd keep the beans. But if you keep the crown, Drew, then centuries later, some evil, bloodthirsty noble might break into your tomb and try to use the crown for world domination. I've seen Harry Potter. I know how it doesn't work. You got to destroy the thing.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. So once we have set up all of this exposition with Jack and Isabel, and we have introduced how giants work in this world, we flash forward 10 years later. Jack now lives with his uncle. And I think it's really interesting the choice to set up Jack with his father and his uncle rather than his mother. I think that was a deliberate choice that kind of is setting up the ending to this movie, which I'm obsessed with. We'll talk about it when we get there. But I think that was at first it was a little odd, but once you've seen the full movie, it makes sense.
It does. And so Jack is a burden to his uncle.
Mm-hmm.
This Jack is not simple. He's not a child. And I really like that about it. He's very intelligent. He just wants more than the life that he's in. And there's not really an avenue for him to have more. And he still believes in this story that his mother told him. And he loves the stories he loves to read. And his uncle is like, that's a waste of time. You are a farmer and you will always be a farmer. So he sees Jack as this burden. And that kind of increases the negativity in Jack's life because it's his uncle who's the one who's always saying, you're no good, you can't do anything, I can't rely on you, like all this stuff. And so they need money to fix the roof of their house. Mm-hmm. And so the uncle tells Jack, sell the horse and the cart in the city and then use the money to buy straw so that we can fix the roof.
Yes. And again, at first I was annoyed that they changed the cow to a horse. There is precedent for that in the fairy tale. Sometimes it is a horse, but traditionally it's a cow. And I was like, why it gotta be a horse? Like, we know it's a cow. It's the same thing as like Crimson Bound. Why would you make it her aunt? Just make it her granny. Just make it a cow. But it's relevant to the story. It's a change that actually matters, as we'll see coming up. So once I saw that, I was like, okay, I can accept that it's a horse.
This movie, I feel like, is very intentional about every decision that they make regarding this story.
Yes.
It feels like a lot of thought went into every single element, and I so deeply appreciate that.
I very much agree.
Yeah, so Jack takes the horse and the cart to the city and then immediately gets distracted by a performance in a tent of basically King Eric and the Giants.
Yeah.
And this is where I got to play my favorite game with my husband of, hey, look, it's Warwick Davis.
Yes, Warwick Davis. There he is. A fun little cameo. And I was hoping he was going to be in more of the movie, but it's just this little quick moment. No, it's just
this little thing. The humans in the play are played by people with dwarfism so that full-sized humans can play the giants. Yes. And I thought that that was kind of clever.
Yeah, I thought that was fun.
In-world, good theatrical casting choices were made.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, is something I care about deeply.
Yes, yeah. And so in this moment, we meet Princess Jasmine. I mean, Princess Isabel.
No, it's she's Jasmine. She's
Isabel's story.
Her entire inner conflict is lifted straight out of Aladdin.
I mean, it is.
And listen, I'm not going to say it's not valid. I'm not.
It's fine. I really would like, and I need to think about this in my own writing now, I would really like these fairy tale retellings to find new portrayals of princes and princesses. Because every princess is being forced into a marriage that she doesn't want to. She wants to, well, actually, princes too, they're all being forced into marriages, and they all just want to marry for love. And the hero of the story, whether it's Jack or Cinderella or whoever, teaches them about the kingdom. And so now they know about the people and, oh, one day you're going to be king and you will have the power to affect change and make things happen. And I'm saying this having just watched Amazon Cinderella, which does the same thing. Every retelling does the same thing with its prince and princess. And I just think we need to find something new.
Yeah, I would love to see a prince in a story who isn't running away from his obligations, but actually legitimately wants to be the prince and knows his kingdom very well because he takes his duty seriously.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And doesn't end up being evil.
We've talked about this before. Princes who want to be princes are villains. And princes who don't want to be princes have to learn from the heroine that, you know, they can become a king and change the kingdom for the better. And yeah, we're going to do the same thing here with Isabel.
We are. We're going to play on some pretty classic tropes with Isabel because she wants more than the life that she's being forced into. And so she escapes the palace frequently. And that's what's happening here. She's gone to see this performance. She's hidden by a cloak. But some men in the crowd are hassling her. And so Jack, of course, steps in to do that noble-hearted must protect, must stand up for. And then we get to play a less frequent game, but one that I also enjoy, which is, hey, look, it's Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor shows up and his hair is perfect from the moment we meet him to the moment we leave him at the end of the movie. No matter what happens, his hair is always in a perfect coif upward and it's beautiful and it's fine. I don't even mind.
And he's playing what ended up being one of my favorite characters in this movie.
Yeah, he's kind of fun.
He's Elmont. He's the head guardian for the princess. So he's tasked with keeping her safe. They have a lovely conversation at one point about how she's sorry that she makes his job so difficult all the time. And it's really cute.
Yeah, yeah. But the introduction here, I got to talk about this. This is my next little rant here, okay? When we meet Elmont, Jack is like, he's got his back to the door of the tent and he's facing the crowd, and the crowd all of a sudden kneels, and Jack's line is, there's something behind me, isn't there? And Cassie, we are going to have to start keeping track of how many movies we watched that use this line, because it's in this movie twice. The second time is a callback to the first time, but it's there twice. Hoodwinked used it as well, which we just watched a couple weeks ago. Well, really last week. And I'm sure it's been in other movies we've watched as well. Just Hollywood is obsessed with there's something behind me, isn't there?
Listen, it's an easy visual gag. It's a comedic moment you don't have to work too hard for.
Yeah, I just, again, Hollywood, let's find the next evolution harder of this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, meanwhile.
Meanwhile?
Yeah. So, Jack, he leaves the tent and he finds out that his cart has been stolen, which, yeah, that's what happens when you just leave your horse and cart in the middle of the road of a city and to go watch a show.
It does seem odd to me that you would take the cart and not the horse.
Well, there is that.
Like, a horse is plot way more useful.
Plot, Drew.
And how do you get the cart away without the horse? Not if
a person really needed a cart.
I guess.
But while the cart is being stolen, inside the palace, something is being stolen as well. And we are introduced to evil Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
Who, he plays the villain in this movie. He's fantastic. Stanley Tucci has so much range and can do no wrong, and I adore him.
It is upsetting that he does not have an Oscar. Does he have an Oscar?
No, he's got 3 Emmys, 2 Golden Globes, 1 Screen Actors Guild. He's been nominated for an Oscar for Lovely Bones, but he did not win.
Okay. That's upsetting.
Yeah, his performance in Lovely Bones is terrifying and amazing. Like, it is so unsettling.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's about a 14-year-old girl who gets kidnapped and murdered.
Fun.
And Stanley Tucci plays the murderer. And
spoiler alert. It's good. Do you know he's the murderer?
It's pretty obvious.
Okay.
Not really. Listen, we're not a spoiler-free podcast. We never
define exactly what it is we might be spoiling. People are not prepared to be spoiled on.
As I remember the movie, it's fairly obvious that he is the killer.
Okay. I'll put it in the show notes. Spoiler
warning. But also, this movie came out like 10 years ago. Honestly, there's a statute of limitations on spoilers.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Anyway, back to Jack the Giant Slayer.
Yeah, so Roderick, which is the name of Stanley Tucci's character, is walking down the hall with his sycophantic henchman, Wick, and they pass a monk, and then they enter his chambers. And all of this time walking down the hallway, they're just dropping plot exposition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very heavy.
Roderick is betrothed to the princess. She's not happy about it, but he doesn't care. You know, all that kind of traditional stuff. When they get to the room, it has been completely ransacked.
Yes. And in particular, there is a book that has like been carved out, and there's clearly something missing from that. And then he looks around the room and there's this potted plant that has been knocked over, and he rushes over to that and digs through the dirt and pulls out an iron crown.
Oh gosh, I wonder what that could be.
I don't think they're trying to hide the fact that it's the magic crown.
No, this is a callback to me saying earlier that if you want something destroyed, you got to destroy it, not just bury it in a ground.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so he's got the crown. You can surmise as you're watching that what's missing from the book is the magic beans.
Yes.
And so he immediately shuts the palace down. He calls for the guards. He's like, don't let anybody leave. Search them. We're looking for a thief. And so obviously it's the monk that they passed in the corridor. And so he knows he needs to get out. So he walks by Jack, who's trying to sell his horse. And he's like, hey, I will give you 10 coppers for that horse.
Mm-hmm. But I don't have the coppers on me.
Yeah, don't have the money with me.
So
Jack's like, that's not going to work for me.
Right. So he offers the beans as collateral. He says, I'll take the horse. You take the beans to the abbey, and the monks there they'll take the beans and they'll give you the money. And I really like the way that they set up the beans here in this scene, because he explains to Jack, like, these are not just beans. He calls them holy relics. And he tells them they have the power to change the world, so don't lose them, and whatever you do, don't get them wet. So I just like the way that it's not just ordinary beans, they're not beans just being tossed around. Like, these beans hold importance, and everybody who encounters them knows that.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that you can kind of tell how desperate this monk is to escape that he's giving up this thing that he worked so hard to steal and, like, needs to keep hold of. I also really liked that Jack does not consent to this trade. The monk yes. kind of shoves the beans at him, and while he's examining them, the monk just takes the horse and rides away.
Yeah.
So I like, again, that kind of twisting of Jack's character. He's not this, like, simple-minded person who's like, yeah, I'll trade this farm animal for a handful of beans. He doesn't actually agree to the exchange.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting thing to keep our eyes on as we go through this month, to look at why does the exchange happen? Like, is Jack willingly taking a handful of beans for his cow or his horse? And why? I think that would be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, we can definitely keep track of that. So Jack goes home with the beans because he doesn't really have a choice. The monk gets captured because the city is shut down and it's a walled city. So, like, even with a horse, he's not going to get very far. But Jack has to go home and he has to tell his uncle, listen, this monk took the horse. He gave me these beans. The uncle is furious, of course, swats the beans out of Jack's hand, calls him an idiot because he believed this story. He got conned. He got tricked. This man wasn't a monk, like, all this kind of stuff. Jack tries to pick up the beans, but one of them falls between the floorboards. And this is, again, where I really like the deliberateness of all of the decisions made in this movie. The reason why Jack had to sell the horse and cart was to get straw to thatch the roof. And so because he wasn't able to get the straw, they weren't able to fix the roof. That night, there's a storm. One of the beans fell under the floorboards. The monk told him, don't get the bean wet. But because he couldn't fix the roof, the rain comes in, it soaks the bean, and that's how the beanstalk grows. And I just really love that kind of domino effect.
Yes, yeah. That's well said. I don't think I thought of it quite that way, but I like that quite a bit. I really also like the scene with Jack and his uncle when his uncle is reprimanding him for taking beans for the horse, because it happens at the same time that we are seeing a scene between Isabel and her father, the king. It's going back and forth between these parallel conversations as the uncle scolds Jack and Isabel appeals to her father and is saying, you know, I don't want to marry Roderick. I want to marry for love. I want more than this life. Like, these two things are happening in tandem.
Yeah, and it's really well written because it's not even just that we're bouncing back and forth between the two scenes. It's that the dialogue that the king is saying carries over into the scene with the uncle. And then Jack's response is to what the king just said. So you know that it's also yes. what the uncle just said. It's yes. really, really smartly written.
Yes. I love any time a movie does something like that. And it is done very well.
So basically, Isabel's appealing to her father. Her father is having none of it. And basically says, you're going to marry Roderick. I trust him. I trust him with the kingdom. And I trust him with you. And she stares him in the eye and goes, as the king wishes.
Mm-hmm.
Or so saith the king.
So that's, saith that's, the king.
So yep. saith the king, and like turns and leaves, and it's like this great moment.
Yeah. So Isabel runs away that night, and she gets lost because it's storming and it's dark, and she doesn't really know where she's going. And then she sees a light ahead, and the light just happens to be coming from Jack's cottage. So she shows up at his door.
And again, though, he puts the lantern out. Because his uncle is out in the storm. His uncle storms away from the house to go get straw to fix the roof, even though Jack tries to be like, dude, we can do that in the morning. It'll be fine. And so he leaves the lantern for his uncle to help his uncle find a way back to the house. And so that's what the princess uses to take shelter.
Yeah, this movie, I think, is much smarter than anyone gives it credit for.
Yeah, it's really, really intelligently put together.
Yeah.
So she comes into shelter. She's got this big hat and this oversized robe, and she's trying to hide her face. But Jack, of course, recognizes her immediately as the princess and is trying to get her to admit that she's the princess.
This reminds me of, have you seen Twisted?
Yes.
Yeah, so Twisted is...
It is you. You're just wearing different clothes.
Exactly. Twisted is, again, yep. it's Aladdin. It's Jafar's backstory. A production by Starkid. You can watch it on YouTube. It's hilarious, amazing references to Disney's Aladdin. But yeah, when Aladdin shows up dressed as Prince Ali, he looks at Jasmine and he's like, how did you recognize me? And she says, it is you. You're just wearing different clothes.
Wearing different clothes. It's so good.
It's that moment. Yeah.
Actually, it's, I think, my favorite StarKid production.
Oh, it is absolutely my favorite. And one day we'll talk about Aladdin and I would love to cover it.
Because we're doing Twisted 100%.
It's so, so smart. I love it.
Yes. But this movie is smart too.
Yes.
So she eventually, you know, reveals, yes, I'm the princess. They kind of talk, they kind of bond about both wanting more than the life that they're kind of trapped in. And then, of course, this is when the storm has caused the bean to get wet and the beanstalk grows.
I love the growth of the beanstalk.
I was about to say that. I love the violence of this.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. It just like consumes the entire house.
Yeah.
And this scene reminds me of the tornado scene from The Wizard of Oz. The way that it lifts the house and the storm is happening around them and the princess is stuck inside and Jack is kind of clinging on from the outside. And then eventually he like reaches up. She's trying to pull him into the house and he grabs her arm, but he doesn't grab her, he grabs her bracelet. And so the bracelet releases and he falls, tumbles to the ground while Isabel is lifted up into the sky.
I also love, it's such a little detail and it's such an easy detail, but I do love it. Jack is afraid of heights.
Yes. Okay.
I love that a lot.
He has a line that happens later when they're climbing the beanstalk where Ewan McGregor asks him, he says like fear of heights and he responds fear of falling. And Cassie,
fear of falling.
That is me. I'm not afraid of heights. Okay. You put me on the edge of a cliff, I'm fine. But put me at the top of a ladder and I cannot handle it.
There's a passage in one of Terry Pratchett's Discworld novels that addresses that. And it basically says most people who say they have a fear of heights don't actually have a fear of heights. They have a fear of depths.
Ooh.
Because you're not afraid of being up high. You're afraid of what happens if all of a sudden you're no longer up high.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting way to think of it. But yes, yeah. That is a
and
good
there's
detail.
Also a conversation that he has with the princess later, which is like, I can't believe you climbed this and you don't like heights. And he's like, it's not that I don't like that you're afraid of heights. He goes, I'm not afraid of them. I'm just not wildly keen on them.
Yeah, which is fair enough, especially this beanstalk just as they climb it, like they really give you a really strong sense of just how high they're going.
Yeah. And I love the visual imagery of this beanstalk because so often in illustrations of this story, it's like one single stem climbing up. And I don't know if you've ever grown beans, but that's not how they do.
Yeah, you couldn't climb that.
Yeah, and I love this beanstalk because it's all of these stems tangled together. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually sturdy. It's actually not going to fall over. And it's actually like climbable. But I love the violence of how this beanstalk grows and that it really feels dangerous and sinister.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, well, Jack went to sleep and when he woke up the next morning, there was a giant beanstalk.
Yes. Like, yes. It's
no, this is a huge deal.
Yes. Yeah. It's massive. And that's going to be like relevant. It's going to be important that it is that violent later in the story as well.
Almost immediately because...
Well, yeah.
So Jack falls from the beanstalk and gets knocked out when he lands. And when he wakes up, he is surrounded by the king and his men.
Yes.
Who have come to investigate the sudden explosion of beanstalk. And they see that he has the princess's bracelet. And they're like, where is the princess? And he goes, she came to my house to take shelter from the storm. And they're like, where's your house? And he's like,
it's up there.
And so the king is like, all right, we need to send somebody up there after her. Like,
yeah. So Elmont is going to go up. Roderick is going to go up. They each have like a sidekick who's going with them. And then there's like seven other men who are going up. And then Jack also volunteers.
Yeah. Jack's like, I need to go. Roderick, of course, wants to go because he's got the crown.
Mm-hmm.
His whole thing was to grow a beanstalk so that he could go control the giants. So of course he's going to go and he's couching it in like concern for his beloved. And then they climb the beanstalk and I love this because this is not like an easy climb. This climb takes like 2 full days.
Yes, they have to stop and sleep.
It is, yeah, it is presented as being very dangerous and very arduous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I love that. I love that we're exploring the reality of what does it actually mean to climb a beanstalk that high into the sky.
Yeah. And to emphasize the fact that Roderick is evil, at one point he tells his sidekick, he tells Wick to lighten the load. And so he ends up cutting the rope and like 5 men fall to their deaths.
Yeah, they were already in some trouble because lightning struck the beanstalk
killed
one of them.
Yeah.
And he was tied to all the others. And so they fell and they were dangling and they're all yelling like, pull us up. And instead,
they cut the rope.
Wick cuts and they fall to their deaths.
Yeah.
It's fine. None of them had names and we hadn't grown to care about any
Very
of them,
much red so. Shirts. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're down to Elmont and, oh, what's his name?
There's 6. So there's Elmont and Craw.
Craw. That's his name.
His sidekick. Roderick and Wick. Jack. And then there's one more man who is still around. His name is Bald.
Yes.
At least that's what the...
So the subtitles
That's
said.
What the closed captions called yep. him. Yeah. Yeah.
So eventually they get to the top of this beanstalk. And they are in the land of the giants. But they don't necessarily yes. know that that's where it is. Like, Jack and Craw, they're both saying, like, giants, man. We're going to the giants. And Elmont's like, I don't know if I believe that. I don't believe the giants are real.
The land is also not a giant land. Often in Jack and the Beanstalk retellings and picture books and stuff, like, Jack gets to the top and then, like... The grass is as tall as he is, right? And
yeah.
boulders are huge, and flowers are huge, and bugs are huge. This looks like a normal land. The
yeah.
grass, the boulders, it's all normal size.
It's all normal size.
Which makes sense when you consider that it's, like, filmed as a live-action movie.
Yeah. And so, Elmont is leading this expedition, and he's sending his men, and then Roderick pulls Jack aside, and he's like, hey, Jack, where are the beans? And Jack tries mm-hmm. to play dumb, and Roderick's like, no, because see, I have a lot of power. I can make you and your uncle disappear forever, so give me the beans.
Yes.
And so Jack does.
And so Jack hands over the beans, except...
He keeps one, and he tucks it into this mm-hmm. necklace he wears for safekeeping. Remember that. It will be important later.
There's a lot of, like, heavy-handed shots. So, like, as Stanley Tucci is climbing, he, like... pats his
yeah,
bag
like caresses
to tell
the
you like
satchels
the crown is here yeah. in the satchel yeah there's just a lot of that but I don't mind because it most of it needs to be there
yeah
but they're not exactly subtle
so they're trying to get some food because all of their rations were with the men who fell and while they're trying to get food Elmont and Craw and Jack because they've split up spring a trap and
yes.
so Jack and Craw get caught in this trap, and Elmont is trying to free them, and a giant shows up
yep.
because he knows that the trap got sprung. And so they're trying desperately to hide from the giant, but the giant can smell them. Also, the giant's names are Fee, Fi, Fo, and
yes,
Fum.
Yeah. And then their general leader is named Fallon, so he's like the lead giant, but the others are all Fee, Fi, Fo, and Fum. Yeah.
Fee, Fi, Fo, Fum.
I love that.
Which
yeah.
made me
yeah.
smile a little bit. But so this giant is, he finds Craw. Elmont tries to attack him.
Which is like
it
the dumbest thing ever.
It goes poorly for both. Yeah.
And yeah.
And my note is, Ewan McGregor, no! Because there is definitely a moment where you think that Ewan McGregor is dead at this point. Except that this is where my meta knowledge came in. And I was like, it is way too early in this movie for Ewan McGregor to be dead.
Exactly, yeah. That was the only reason that I realized that they were just, like, knocked out and not dead.
Yeah.
Because I was like, no, Ewan McGregor, you don't kill him this early and so unceremoniously.
Yeah, the other guy,
maybe
he's dead.
Yeah.
But Ewan McGregor cannot be dead this early in the movie.
Yeah.
This is 2013.
Yeah, this is, like, his
Ewan peak. McGregor's not a nobody. Yeah. He's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, yeah.
Like...
Yes, but as you said, the giant finds them by smelling them, but Jack happens to have hidden in this, like, pool of water. So his smell is covered, so the giant doesn't find him. Meanwhile, Roderick and Bald and Wick are also, like, searching for Isabelle. And again, Roderick, just to be evil, pushes Bald over a cliff. And just as he does that, 2 more giants show up. One of them grabs Wick and bites off his head.
Yeah, it's great.
It's very, I mean, it's quite violent.
super gruesome. And they're about to do the same when Stanley Tucci puts on the magic crown.
Yes.
So that he now controls the giants. So then we go meet General Fallon, who has two heads. He has Big Head Fallon and Small Head Fallon.
Yes.
As the subtitles.
Yes. Call him.
So named them.
Yep.
And they're talking to Princess Isabel, who's in a cage. And there's like a moment that I thought was really great where they talk about Eric yes. the Terrible.
I have this bolded in my notes to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Eric the Terrible versus Eric the Great.
Yeah.
And it's kind of this idea of Roderick has a line later that I feel like sums up everything they're going for with this movie. He's talking to Jack. No, he's talking to Elmont. And he says, "You thought you were the hero of this story. Don't you know we all think that?" And so I think that that idea is so fascinating. Although I do have to say that while from the giant's perspective, I'm sure Eric the Terrible is a fair moniker. This isn't one situation where like, this isn't like Frozen 2, okay? Where you find out that Grandpa actually did like steal all this land and enslave these people. Eric literally was just like, I need to protect my people. He didn't destroy all the giants. He didn't enslave them beyond just making them go back to their land so that he could keep them separate from his people.
Yeah, I love the theme whenever it shows up in anything of, you know, history is written by the victors. And I even wrote out in my notes, I wrote out the lyrics from Wonderful, from Wicked, is one a crusader or ruthless invader? It's all in which labels are able to persist, right? So it's, yeah. I love that theme. And this movie brings it up several times because it's brought up here. Mm-hmm. It's brought up, like you mentioned later on, from Ewan McGregor. And even the ending of the movie questions, you know, what is the truth in our history?
Yeah.
That being said, this movie does not necessarily portray this theme well because of what you just said. Because Eric is, like, what we have learned of Eric is presented as the truth. If you're going to bring up this theme, you need to also introduce an element of that history that has been incorrectly portrayed.
Yeah.
And that's not done.
And I have another point about that.
Okay.
To bring up later.
Okay. Okay.
Because there is a moment where I thought that they were going to take things in a vastly different direction than they ended up taking them.
Ooh, interesting.
And I was really excited about it. And then it didn't happen. I was like, oh, well, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I love that theme. I love that they bring it up. But when you introduce that theme, you have to introduce, like, that has to have happened.
Yeah. And they could have, and we'll get there.
Okay. Cool. I want to hear it when we get there. So.
But yeah, so we're with Princess Isabel, and then they bring in Craw and Elmont, and my note is literally, oh good, they're not dead yet. And then literally 20 seconds later,
they kill Craw.
Craw gets killed, and my note is, welp.
So much for that.
But Ewan McGregor's not dead. He's still alive. And I love him. I love him.
Ewan McGregor in general, or just...
Ewan McGregor... Well, yes, Ewan McGregor in general, but this character specifically, like, yeah. I desperately want an entire movie that's just his
I would watch that.
Story.
Yeah.
Like, 100%.
Yeah. Would it be a different fairy tale? What fairy tale would it be? What do you think?
I don't know. We can figure that out.
He could be Hansel.
Yeah.
I don't know if that fits into this world. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So at this point, Roderick comes in with the other two giants, and Fallon's like, what are you doing? Why haven't you killed this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And then Roderick reveals that he has the crown, and Isabel is so excited. She's like, yes,
yeah,
Roderick, you have the crown. You control the giants. This is so great. And then he's like, no, our betrothal's off.
Yes. Yes.
I'm here to conquer the world.
Yeah. So he announces his plan before all of the giants and before Roderick and Isabel. He tells them all, my plan is to use the giants to take the human kingdoms one by one, and his goal is to basically take over the world. And during the scene, we're also flashing over to Jack, because Jack has followed the giants to this fortress, and he has found their treasure, right? And there's a harp there, which is a nice little reference. But my question here is, why? Like, the treasure is never relevant again in this story.
No, I think it's just to add that element, that traditional element of Jack.
It's really just to show us an egg and a harp.
An egg and a harp and gold. Like, yeah. I honestly think that's the reason for Jack to be going through this armory.
Yeah, I just feel like if you're going to show us the gold.
I mean, he does keep the egg. He takes the egg with him.
Oh, that's true. Okay, well.
But yeah, so Isabel and Almont are given over to this, like, chef giant who's making Almont into a pie. And Jack...
Not a pie, a pig in a blanket.
A pig in a blanket, yes, alongside actual pigs. And I just love the banter in the scene because Jack comes in to, like, cut him loose. And he's like, I had this. Almont's like, I had this under control. Like, I appreciate your help, but I was on top of this.
I really like this scene because it's a nice way of exploring, like, what it's like to be in this world of the giants. You know, if we didn't have this scene, the world of the giants would feel a lot emptier than it does. Mm-hmm. But because we include this, like, it gives us, like, just a little peek into their life.
Yeah. And so they're able to free Almont. They end up killing... Jack ends up killing this giant. That's where the giant slayer bit comes in.
Yes, yeah.
And so then they're like, okay, we have to get Isabel back down the beanstalk.
Right.
And we have to stop Roderick.
Right.
So Almont says, Jack, you and Isabel go down the stalk. I will deal with Roderick.
Right. So Jack and Isabel, they start descending the beanstalk. Meanwhile, during all of this... So before they descend the beanstalk, they find a giant there. Roderick put a giant at the beanstalk to guard it. And they defeat him by pushing him over the edge. And so while they're climbing down the beanstalk, the king and the other humans down below, they find the giant's body. And so...
Yeah, and there's been this question. They've been mm-hmm. flashing back to the king and his guard frequently. And there was this question asked earlier by the king of, should I cut it down?
Right.
Should I abandon my daughter to protect the entire human world? Because if there are giants up there and they come down before she does, we're screwed.
Yeah, the general has this great line where the king says, like, what happens if something else comes down before Isabel comes down? And the general says, then we will enter an era where no person, no matter whether it's like the poorest peasant or the highest noble, would wish to be the king. Basically saying, like, if a giant comes down, this is on you. And if the giant doesn't kill you, probably the people will, because, like, you will have caused this. You will be held responsible.
Yeah, and I love the grappling of this question, because mm-hmm. we've seen throughout this movie that this king, he dearly loves his daughter, and he's terrified of losing her, like he lost her mother. And that's part of the reason he's put her in such tight, you know, constraints. And so to watch him have to grapple with this question of, do I hold out hope that my daughter is alive, or do I do what I need to do to protect the entire human world?
Yeah.
And so when the giant falls over the edge and lands dead at the base of the beanstalk, the king is like, cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
Cut it down and do it now.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the people are horrified, like, how could you abandon your daughter? And the general is like, no, you heard the king. Cut it down.
Yeah. But because this beanstalk is so massive, it's not like you imagine in a fairy tale.
Yeah.
This takes the effort of, like, dozens of men and horses and all kinds of machinery. So they're working on that while Jack and Isabel are up having this romantic moment in the beanstalk and they kiss.
I loved this little moment with Jack and Isabel because Jack acknowledges. So before, when he volunteered to climb the beanstalk, Almont took him aside. He's like, dude, in no version of this do you get to marry her. I want to be very clear about that. Like, yeah. Not only is she engaged to somebody else, but you're a commoner and there's a law against it. So I'm going to need you to, like, keep those hopes tamped down.
Hitting that Aladdin point.
Yes. And so as they're climbing down, he says to her, like, listen, I know that on the ground, this can never happen. But while we are still up in the air, can we have this moment?
Yeah.
And I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet. Meanwhile, back up in the sky, the giants approach the beanstalk. Almont is waiting for them. And Roderick, like, comes up to the cliff edge and Almont jumps out and attacks him. And they have this fight.
This is an epic fight.
It's a good one.
It goes into the, like, the river cavern underneath.
Yeah.
And so the giants are, like, trying to dig to get to Roderick because he's like, help me. And then he's got, like, Ewan McGregor held under the water and he's lost his knife, but then his knife is coming down with the current and he grabs it with his teeth and uses it to stab.
I hated that. That was, like, my worst moment of the movie. I could not handle when, like, the knife floated in the water towards him and, like, slowly rotated to be handled first so he could grab it in his mouth. That was I can handle giants in the sky. That was too much for me.
Regardless, they have this fight, and it ends with Elmont stabbing Roderick, and then Fantasy Stanley Tucci, like an idiot, removes the penetrating object. Here's a PSA for you boys and girls and non-binary pals listening to this. If you get stabbed, don't pull it out.
You leave the thing in.
Leave the thing in.
You leave the thing in.
If you've ever done that magic trick where you blow up a balloon and then you stab it with a skewer and it goes all the way through and the balloon doesn't pop and no air escapes, that's why you don't remove a penetrating object. Because as soon as you pull it out,
that's right,
the bleeding starts. And that is why Stanley Tucci dies in this movie. Let that be a lesson to all of you.
Yeah. So Stanley Tucci is now dead. Elmont, Ewan McGregor is going for the crown, but before he can get to it, the giants reach in and pull out Stanley Tucci, and they take off his crown and put it on his finger like a ring, and now Fallon is king of the giants.
And is controlling them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, this was the point where I was like, oh, hey, we're all wrapped up. We've come down the beanstalk. They've chopped it down. Jack and Isabel have made it to the bottom alive after some gymnastics of getting off the thing.
I love the falling of the beanstalk. They like show just how tall it is, and as it falls, it goes for miles and miles and miles. And Jack and Isabel have to like land in a pile of hay, and Elmont is at the top, so he ends up landing in the castle moat. I just think the way they handled the beanstalk is so good.
No, it was really great. And he dives for it.
Yeah.
He's like, nope, leaving me here.
Slices through the water. Yeah.
But then there's no way for the giants to get back down. And so they've got this moment where Isabel goes with her father and Jack is recognized for the job that he did after some minor prompting from Isabel towards her father. And they're heading back and they've said their goodbyes. And I'm like, oh, okay, we must be almost done. And I hit the pause button. And no, there are 35 minutes left in this movie.
That's right. That's right. We've got a final battle to get through. So Fallon finds the bag of beans that Roderick dropped while he was fighting with Elmont. So they are able to plant the beans from the top of the sky. And the giants kind of like jump onto the ends of the beanstalks as they're growing. So they grow downward, and they're able to ride the beanstalks down.
Which makes sense, and I knew that's what they were doing, but my note is I did want beanstalkception.
Me too.
Like, I did want to know what is above the giants' world.
That would have been cool. Yeah.
But no, they're riding the beanstalks down to the ground. Yes. And as soon as I saw them pick up the pouch of beans, I was like, okay, so how is this bean that Jack kept going to save the day?
I saw this one coming.
I loved it. I did not see it coming. I did not figure out what he was doing until like the moment it was happening.
Oh, that's funny. Because usually you figure these things out.
Usually I do. And I didn't figure this one out. So, yeah, they're riding down. Jack finds his horse, you know, coincidentally. He sees the giants coming. And so he starts riding to catch up with the king and his guard to let them know, hey, giants are coming. It's going to be bad.
So they get to the castle. Elmont is preparing everybody in the castle for battle. The king and Isabel and Jack, they barely make it in before they close the drawbridge. And this is our final battle.
And I gotta say, I'm very impressed with the solidity of this drawbridge. Because the giants have grappling hooks on one end of it. And the humans have like grappling arrows that have gone through it, so they're trying to pull it shut from this way, and the giant's trying to pull it open from this way, and that thing is not breaking at all. That's some ironwood beams that are making this drawbridge, man.
It's a very sturdy drawbridge.
Very sturdy drawbridge.
They are fighting. They dump oil into the moat and light it on fire, and Fallon falls into the moat, and he ends up, you think he's dead, but really he ends up like swimming through the aqueducts of the castle. And the king sends Isabel and Jack. He sends them up to a tower so they can light a beacon to warn the other kingdoms. So, of course, Fallon ends up like breaking through the floor of the throne room and confronting Jack and Isabel. And this is where that last bean finally comes into play.
Yeah, this was gruesome as hell.
This was dark. So
I loved it.
Fallon has Isabel in one hand and Jack in the other. And Fallon is about to eat Jack, but Jack grabs the bean and throws it into Fallon's mouth. And you see it go down his throat and into his stomach. And it gets wet there by the acids of his stomach. And the beanstalk grows within Fallon and kills him by like consuming him. It was horrifying. It is gruesome.
Absolutely gruesome. Okay, so now we get to the moment where I feel like they could have brought this message home in a really strong way.
Okay, hit me.
And didn't, and I'm was excited. Sad about it. So Almont and the king are making the final stand against the giants. They've gotten the drawbridge down. They're inside the walls. Everybody's about to die. The humans are like, we will fight. And then all of a sudden, the giants start dropping. The beanstalk explodes out of the top of the palace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the giants start dropping their weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this thought of, oh, Fallon is dead. He's no longer controlling them. Was it Fallon's bloodthirstiness all along that was making all of the giants bloodthirsty? And now that they're free from his control, they're revealing that they don't actually want this fight and they're going to leave of their own accord. That, of course, is not what's happening.
No.
What's happening is that Jack has found the crown and he's controlling the giants now.
Okay. Many thoughts here. First of all, I didn't think of that at all. I think it's very interesting. And again, I wish that they had done something to indicate that history is not, it didn't play out the way that they think that it did. But here's my next thought. Jack and Isabel enter the courtyard and Jack is holding the crown. Why the heck is Jack holding the crown and not Isabel?
Yes.
She's the descendant of King Eric. It makes no narrative, except for the fact that this is Jack the Giant Slayer. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason for it to be Jack. Narratively, well, it should be Isabel.
I agree with you. It should be Isabel. I think one reason to make it Jack is because they've made such a big deal out of whoever has the crown is king of the giants. So if they wanted to give Jack that, nudge.
No. I do not accept.
Listen, I agree with you, man.
Isabel's whole story, she's a princess in a fairy tale movie. Her whole story is learning that the responsibility of being royal is important. And so this would be that moment for her. But they give it to Jack.
And I would have liked this moment better with Jack if he hadn't made all the giants kneel.
Mm.
Wait,
what do you mean?
Like,
I think the giants kneel automatically.
Jack doesn't just make them stop fighting.
Yeah.
I see. To me, it feels like he was forcing the giants to kneel to him. Because they don't kneel automatically, because when Roderick gets the crown,
they kneel.
He has to.
Don't they?
They kneel for him, but because he makes them with the crown, because Fallon doesn't kneel and he forces Fallon to.
You're right. I didn't think of that.
And so for me, I didn't like that feeling of Jack, invoking that amount of power over them. Like, by all means, use the crown to stop the fighting and to stop the battle and to make the giants go home.
Yes, but by kneeling,
Don't abuse that power in that way.
Yeah. And kneeling specifically is like bowing. It's like saying, I am your king.
Yes.
Yeah. So I get what they were going for. I just think we missed it just by a hair. You gave the crown to the wrong character.
They made such deliberate, intelligent choices for so much of this movie that I wish that this choice had had a little bit more thought put into it.
Yeah.
And I think it stands out because everything up to this point has been so carefully done.
Yeah, I agree.
But this is where we get the callback because the giants start kneeling while Almont is doing his big speech. And that's when he gets to go, there's something behind me, isn't there? And then you turn and you see Jack with the crown.
Yeah.
Just,
it's not that bad. It's not the end of the world. But
No.
I think it's a funny thing that it keeps coming up, especially in these back-to-back movies with this and Hoodwinked.
Yeah. And so then we flash forward to Jack now narrating the tale of the giants, and he says that one of the things is that they got rid of the rule that the princess couldn't marry a commoner, and so we see that he's now king, he and Isabel are married, they have two kids, he's telling the story to them, and they ask at the end, they're like, what happened to the crown? You never tell us what happened to the crown.
Okay, Cassie, I am obsessed with these last 3 or 4 minutes. I'm obsessed.
Uh-huh.
I'm obsessed.
I know.
Okay. So he says, I won't tell you what happened to the crown. Then we go to the crown and we see the crown get gilded over and it is ornamented and added onto and reformed into a new crown. Meanwhile, we're hearing all these voiceovers of different men and women and other people telling the story and changing the details. So someone says, like, Jack's father did this. Was it his father or was it his mother? And you hear, I smell the blood of an Englishman. And we hear mentions of the golden harp and his horse, or was it a cow? And like all the elements of the fairy tale that we know are brought in, and we hear about how the story has changed over history and over time. And we end this with the crown. We've been seeing the crown get changed while we're hearing that, and we end this with the crown in a glass box in the Tower of London, where the crown is now on display as one of the like crown jewels. And we're now in like a modern setting, and we pan out on modern London, and we see like the London Bridge and Big Ben, and we see buses and cars, and we're in modern day, and we pan up into the sky where we see the land of the giants one more time, and that's the end. And I love it. I think it's so smart.
Yes. And here's my thing.
Uh-oh.
Because I love it. I love the changing of the story and the evolution of the story and all that kind of stuff. That's great. I love, you know, becoming... But the thing is, here's the thing. I am a fan of English history.
Okay.
And as long as this exists in like fantasy world, as long as we have that and we've got like, it's the Kingdom of Albion. Like, okay, it's like a fictional version of England, whatever. But as soon as you bring it into the modern day, you're like tying it to actual English history. And there is not a Queen Isabella of England at any point. The closest we come, and I can almost excuse it for this, is that King John's wife was named Isabella, and Jack is often a nickname for John. And so I might be like, oh, that's really clever. Except that King John was horrible.
True.
King John is literally taught in history classes in England. He's referred to as Bad King John. Nobody liked him.
This doesn't bother me because it's clearly like an alternate universe. Like they're not trying to present this as real history.
I know. It's just like my note is legitimately, okay, love that. Except there's no King Jack or Queen Isabella.
But they're conveying
the pedant in me coming out.
They're conveying the changing of stories over time. That's what they wanted to represent here at the end. And the way to do that is to show time passing.
Listen, I am all for the portrayal of the current royal family as secretly having the power to control giants, by all means.
I think I'm okay with generous. That
imagery. It's fantastic. It's just the pedant in me coming out.
Well, I thought it was cool.
I thought it was cool too. I just have to do the, actually, there was never a Queen Isabella of England.
Okay.
Listen, I haven't dropped this fact on this podcast, and this is a perfect opportunity to talk about it. I am proprietary over Queen Isabella and King John because they are my ancestors. So.
Whoa.
Yes, I am descended from English royalty.
Cassie, I'm descended from Mary Boleyn.
I'm not descended from that line of English royalty.
Yeah, I know.
I'm the Plantagenet. We represent several centuries before.
Different branches.
We do.
But here's the thing. I don't think necessarily it's wise to brag about being descended from English royalty. But it's there.
No.
It is there.
And it's a fun fact. I asked my mom. It's a fun fact. And I got to bring it up a lot on Shakespeare.
Oh, of course.
My other podcast. Because he wrote a bunch of histories about the Henrys and about King John. And I'm descended from a few Henrys. And I asked my mom when we were doing King John, because I've always known I was descended from King John. But the way that my mother has always told it through my history is we're descended from King John and his fifth concubine. So it's an illegitimate line. So I asked my mom when we were talking about that episode, I was like, hey, can you give me the family tree so that I can like,
I distinctly remember that your mom was like very interested in your family tree. And if I remember correctly, she has traced it back to King Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes, But you have to understand that the line that takes it back to King Nebuchadnezzar goes through the Mormons, who want to connect everybody back to Bible figures.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
It's not like solid.
Okay,
The back to King John and King Henry and Eleanor of Aquitaine, like that's a solid line.
Yeah.
But what I found out when she gave me the tree is that I've always known about John and his concubine, but apparently I have another line that comes down through John and Isabel, like a legitimate line.
Cool.
And so I saw that and I was like, but I need you to explain to me, Mother, what happened and why I am not currently the Queen of England.
Yeah, that's what I always and say. Her, I always say, if enough people die, I could be
King. If enough people die. And her response was, well, because you have an older brother. And I'm like, okay, but let's pretend like he's out
I'm
the
oldest, so I would get it.
But yeah, so that was my little fun history fact. No, I do like the end of this movie. I like that they show the changing of the story and how it evolves over time. And I thought it was cute that they connected it back to like the modern world and like, oh, look, it's the crown. And I realized what they were doing pretty early on in that process. And I was like, that's, I like that. I do. I like it. I like the end of this movie.
All this to say, you are just a hater.
I'm just a pedant. I will argue semantics.
Same difference.
Until I get tired of arguing semantics, and then it's like, now we have a hard no, and I'm not going to do it anymore. But
Yeah, hard stop. Okay, let's talk about our criteria. So, our first criteria, address Jack as a heroic figure. Either make it clear that he is a total fool, or make him clever. Just we need to
define his character, and don't just leave it at what we get from the fairy tale. And I think that they did a good job with this Jack.
Yeah, this Jack is an everyman.
He is.
I like him.
And they definitely redefined, recontextualized the world to show that his actions were heroic. So the giant
for
that
sure.
he killed,
absolutely.
The giant that he defeated, like, it was to save humanity.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He's not a bad guy.
No.
And he doesn't steal anything, really. I guess he steals
the
egg.
He takes the egg, but like at that point, it's kind of just spoils of war.
Our second criteria, tie in the mysterious old man that buys the cow.
This was
what is his purpose? What's going on here? I love this.
This was so smart that it was the monk stole the beans because they found out somehow that Roderick had them and they couldn't let them fall into his hands. So they stole the beans back. And then it was this, like, desperate need to escape. Like, that's why he needs the horse and the beans are all he has. Like, that was so well done. That was one of the best interpretations of that moment that I've seen.
I think so, too. The only thing that I think would have, like, really clinched it for me, and I don't know how or what would happen for this, but the whole thing was that, like, he needed to return the beans to the abbey. I feel like I needed a scene in the abbey at some point towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we set up the monks at the beginning and never, like,
never do
we just kind of
the
abandoned
monks,
them. We left them behind. Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
But otherwise, I like how this moment happened.
Yes.
Our third criteria, explore the implications of the world of the giants. I think this is good, but could be better, honestly.
Yeah, I would like a little bit more from their perspective. We've talked about that as we've gone through this episode.
Yeah, I think from the human world, fantastic. From the giants' world, I feel like I don't understand anything about their world or their society or what's going on up there.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need that much more, but in order to fulfill this criteria, I feel like I needed just a little bit more about like their
Well, and I want to know like how long these giants live too, because part of the legend that Jack and Isabel listened to as children talked about like the gruesome two-headed general. And then you meet that two-headed general and it's like, okay, but in the human world, enough time has passed that a lot of people don't think this really happened. So are these the same giants?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Yeah. Are they immortal unless directly killed?
I don't know.
But they're a violent civilization, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. This seems.
They could have expanded.
A few lingering questions.
They could have expanded the world of the giants, but they did give us a really solid explanation of how the world of the humans reacted to the world of the giants. And that I like a
exactly.
lot.
I agree. Yeah. I think what's there is enough. You know, for us, we're digging into it, so we're going to ask more questions than what's answered. But for anybody else who's just going to watch this movie, like, it's fine.
Yeah.
There's plenty there. Okay, and then our fourth criteria is to make the ending matter. Because the way that the fairy tale ends is, like, Jack just gets away with murder, gets away with thievery, There are no real repercussions. We don't address what happens next. This movie, I think, perfectly addresses everything that, every consequence that happens mm-hmm. from the actions of this movie.
Yeah. I know that it's not something that could easily be fit in, but I am sitting there going, what did they do with all that beanstalk? Like, is it still there? Can you still, like, trace the path of where the beanstalk fell by, like, extra fertile soil in that?
That would be interesting. I would love to see something like that. That would have been
really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wouldn't have taken much to include that.
Yeah. So little things like that. But overall, yes. And I like the messaging of this movie. I like that idea of we all think we're the hero of our story. Again, I think they mm-hmm. could have enhanced it a little bit in a couple places. But
yeah, it's there. I like that it's there. I just would like a little bit more. A
little bit more. But overall, I think this movie is very well done. I think it's very well written.
I was so impressed.
Good performances.
I did not expect to like this as much as I did.
Yeah. I was expecting it to be kind of campy, and it's not.
But honestly, if you put Ewan McGregor and Stanley Tucci in any given movie, I'm probably going to like it.
Agreed.
And also really interesting that they're both in Beauty and the Beast.
That's true.
Another fairy tale retelling.
We can definitely play our 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with this.
Easily. All right. Any final thoughts on Jack Giant Slayer? I think we both loved it.
Yeah. I really liked this movie.
Yeah. Awesome. Next week. What are we talking about next week? Crazy Jack. We're
reading Crazy Jack next week by Donna Jo Napoli. So we're going back to one of the originating queens of fairy tale retellings.
That's right. That's right.
I have read this book before, but it has been a while since
me
I did
too.
Snowman.
It's probably been, I mean,
it's been a decade because it was for my fairy tale blog. That's the first last time that I read it.
I was probably 14 or 15 when I read it. So
yeah. So I'm looking forward to rereading it and seeing if my impressions of it hold up. But in the meantime, if you would like to chat with us about this episode or about Jack and the Beanstalk in general, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram. Both places we are Of Slippers and Spindles. You can also send us an email to ofslippersandspindles@gmail.com.
Absolutely. And you can also help us out by leaving a review in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast catcher you use that helps other people find the podcast, because other listeners really value the opinions of other people. So if you don't mind taking just a moment to help us out, we would really appreciate it. Cassie, anything else?
I think that covers it for today.
Cool. We will see you all next week.
Bye, friends.
Bye. It is upsetting that he does not have an Oscar. Does he have an Oscar? I don't think he does.
You asked me that question the first time we recorded, and I didn't fact check.
We're going to find out.
Does Stanley Tucci have an Oscar?
He's got a lot of awards.
He was nominated. He's won an Emmy.
He has a Wikipedia page that is just list of awards and nominations received by Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, he does.